Check it out. Once upon a time, not long ago, when the player from the point didn't have no flow.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. What's going on, Chicago? What's up? What's up, Chicago? Cook County, Illinois. Good morning, America, the world. It's time to get up, y'all. It's the hottest political program on this side of heaven. It is Sunday mornings. I'm your host, Brandon Johnson. As always, glad to be in studio with you all. WCPT 820 AM where the facts do matter. And you matter. You matter. You all have made this experience over the last couple of years absolutely amazing. Your consciousness, your commitment to justice, the courageous and the bravery of those of us who still believe that that those that have been ignored for too long not only require the power structure to pay attention to our demands, but you have to begin to agree and acquiesce to them. Glad to be in studio with you all. Again, this is the largest progressive talk radio station in the entire world. And it's right here in the city of Chicago. And so good to have a place where progressive ideas can be raised. And we can be challenged as well. I know there are folks who listen to this station or listen to this show, and you probably don't like me. I shouldn't take it that personally. You may not agree with my views. I don't know if you know me well enough not to like me. I don't think anyone doesn't like me. I mean, that's why I have an entire committee called the Friends of Brandon Johnson. And they actually follow me around. And sometimes on cue, they will clap. On cue.
Oh, no, not on cue.
there they are. Hey, what's up, Candace Castillo? Joining us remotely again. How you doing this morning, sister?
I'm fine. I think, but I have some questions. Like,
How many?
Honestly, I'm not sure if the Friends of Brandon Johnson actually like you or they like what you do politically for Cook County. I don't know if they're actual friends, though.
Mm-hmm. Friends give you money.
I'm not sure they're actually your friends.
How much money have you given me, Candace?
Actually, I'm technically a friend of Brandon Johnson.
See?
I have donated.
See?
Because I believe in donating to politics that I believe in.
You know, the politics that I ultimately believe in, Candace, are the politics that actually bring about solutions, right? We have real political problems, you know, Candace, and, you know, from the corporations that continue to ignore and dismissed workers, you know, the political system that still hasn't provided a type of investment in communities that can begin to really see public safety shift in this country, because I believe that's incredibly important and it's essential to stable communities, is to make sure that people have W-2s. I'm committed to that. And so we have political problems, and so many of these solutions do require us to have, like, the type of politics that we've lifted up on this show. And so, again, whether it's protecting workers and seeing workers, and I want to run through some of that today, whether it's, again, dealing with joblessness and the isolation of abject poverty and what that means for communities that have been dismissed and ignored and invisible for far too long. But it also means that, you know, you have to have political solutions to a pandemic, of course, that is still in charge. It very much is. And we're seeing right here, Candace, in Chicago, the fact that, you know, just on the west side of Chicago, Jensen Elementary School, there was a lot of attention that was given to this school finally. But 10, 11 of the classrooms there are in isolation. 11 of the 17 classes are in quarantine. And we're talking just documented, Candace. We're talking, you know, well over 500 students. But we have 11,000 students have been exposed to the virus potentially, and the impact that this has on communities that have already been suffering through pandemic after pandemic after pandemic. And so I believe we have a responsibility on this show to bring political solutions and also bring a little bit of hope to our moment. And thank you to our live studio audience. There are no breakthrough cases here. We're grateful for that. So, you know, we're still encouraging people to remain vigilant in this moment, to get vaccinated. And so today I really, you know, Candace, I'm just full of so much this morning, and partly it's because I kind of had a late night last night. I'm in full daddy mode on Saturdays. We had a lot of good activities. Shout out to all the organizers, the AAA B&A for the Austin 5K, Cook County Commissioners, CCD1. We had a team of runners out there. And you all know that I'm not a big fan of joggers, except for when it meets my political needs. So thank you, Caroline Sharp, Floyd Turner. I mean, we had a whole crew out there running with a Team Johnson, the Austin 5K. You know, many people know who listen to this show. The Austin neighborhood is the largest concentration of Black folks, I believe, in all of America. It's not just a neighborhood, you all. This is where we live. My wife and I are raising our children in Austin, right there on the west side of Chicago, and we enjoy every part of it. So we were running and walking through the neighborhood and coming down Chicago Avenue. So again, thank you, Malcolm Crawford. And then Congressman Davis had a big walk in Garfield Park yesterday, Candace. I was joined by Lakeisha Collins, Representative Ford. We were out there because this is Recovery Month. I don't know if I've expressed this, but, you know, Candace, I lost my older brother because of a drug addiction. It's very traumatic. So his kids, he now has, he would be a grandfather today if he were alive. And so we've been out, you know, really pushing for like real economic security to exist in our communities. And so what I want to get into today, because clearly I have a lot on my heart, you know, everything from how we treat workers to how we treat trauma, ultimately. Right. And so this is big question, Candace, about how involved does government need to be in this moment, and particularly around even getting people vaccinated? And should, maybe we'll ask this question as the big question for today, dealing with workers, dealing with our communities, you know, dealing with, you know, pushing our people to be more politically engaged. But, you know, should we have a mandate for vaccination? Because it appears to me, Candace, that Lori Lightfoot is not trying, but she is rolling back many of the mitigating the mitigations that were in place to curtail the spread of this virus. And so you're seeing this ease up. And so you have to ask yourself this question, you know, why is there this rush to ease up on a pandemic and, you know, the type of mitigating opportunities that we can put in place in order to protect people? Why would you ease that up? And then two, like, is the surest way to save and keep people healthy is to have mandates? And so are we moving towards, is, should we move towards, maybe that's the question, should Chicago mandate vaccinations? I mean, particularly for those students who will be eligible in maybe in a couple of weeks, Candace. Okay.
Brandon, that's a very hard one for me on a number of levels because I am vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
When the vaccinations become available, I will definitely get my son vaccinated.
Okay, because he's not 12 yet.
Today. He's not 12 yet.
Right.
This is today, actually, is his 11th birthday, which is why I'm not in the studio. However.
Those are all my friends wishing him a happy birthday, by the way.
Well, thank you. However, I do understand why people have some concerns. I do understand having the concerns.
Mm-hmm.
However, some of the people who have concerns have had some long-term incidences with medicine in America, in Chicago, in general. So it's very, very, very difficult to say, you should hurry up and get this vaccine. And here's why. In the city of Chicago, medicine, hospitals, put like this, you can't close a maternity ward and at the same time push this vaccine and say, but I care about you and your health. How do you care about me and my health if you are closing the hospitals that are nearest to me to take care of everything else?
Yeah. I mean, look.
We have to care about people's overall health. Now, I do agree that people should get the vaccine, and I encourage people to do it every chance I get. However, I can't understand some of those things. You can't just push one part of a person's health and say, oh, but your drug addiction, if you disclose that, you'll go to jail. Oh, but your diabetes and you can't afford your medicine. Sorry. We have to stay vigilant on the whole thing.
We absolutely do, and this is what we try to do here on this show, though we do have a propensity for badness here. We'll try not to do that today, especially if the Sox fans stay away from me, just for now.
I have on my White Sox t-shirt today, Brandon.
I know you do. I was everywhere
because
I went.
I'm such a proud Southsider and a proud White Sox fan.
It's interesting. You didn't really become a Sox fan until you knew I was a Cubs fan, by the way. Yeah.
So. That's so not true. I am a lifelong Southsider. And even
you notice how she keeps saying she's a lifelong Southsider. You never said that I'm a Sox fan.
I am a fan of the Chicago White Sox.
If the Cubs were winning, you would be wearing blue, red, and white right now. Yes, she would. 773-763-9278. It is the hottest political program on this side of heaven. There's so much to discuss today. Have we reached a point because of the severity of the issues that we are faced with day in and day out where there's a requirement of to mandate? How do we in this moment, you know, really hold our political leadership accountable? And that includes myself. Are we doing enough to really create an environment that people can fully recover? And as I said, being out there yesterday in Garfield Park with so many families that are looking for services, that need services, that want to get healthy and better, I really wish some of these services would have been more readily available for my own brother and his struggle. And with depression and his struggle with just life in general that caused him to have and suffer from an addiction that ultimately led to the deterioration of his body. And he was not even 40 years old. I believe Leon was 36, 37 years old, something like that. And to see his son and now his grandson, and, you know, that there's a tremendous amount of loss. And I don't know if we talk enough about it. I think we're doing better of the type of trauma that we experience every single day in this city. And there's so much to share about that. But I think that trauma is something that obviously has to be treated, but it has to be treated in the context, to your point, Candace, in a holistic way. And so, you know, I want to have this full conversation about what does it mean to have a government that ultimately works to mandate, but what does it really mean to have a government that's willing to treat people and to really treat them in the most humane way, treating our trauma, right? Because, you know, I was with the El Milagro workers this week, and I'll share about that. And we were with Nabisco workers the week before. These awful conditions that people are having to suffer through day in and day out. It's horrifying. It really is. It's horrifying to think that there are families every single day that are showing up in working conditions that are not healthy. And so whether it's a classroom or whether it's a factory, we have work to do, you all, to save people and to help folks recover. It's Sunday mornings, you all, with Brandon Johnson, Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson. So good to be with you all in the studio. Happy birthday. Yeah, call him JJ, Jaden. Candace Castillo, my faithful co-host. She is remote preparing for her son's big birthday party, 11 years old. We got Dylan. We got Paul. We got you. Dave is already on the line. Jim is holding. When we come back, let's get to your calls. Hit us up on social media, okay? I see my sisters are watching this morning. What's up, Joy and Evelyn? They're both, somehow Evelyn got younger than Joy, even they, I don't know how that worked. We got Lori is with us, Drew hanging out with us, Vicky. We're going to hear from Lori in a little bit. Not that Lori. The good Lori. Sunday morning, y'all. Get up.
Rock this data. Amazing flavor. Yo, the way y'all rock this data. Amazing flavor. Yo, the
Yo, yo, what? It's Thunderborn. It's a, I can't do it. I tried to keep a straight face, y'all. Look, deep down inside, there are two things that I want to do before, you know, I transition up out of here, you know, 60 years or so from now. Three things. I want to jump out of an airplane. I want to know what it feels like to face a fastball, a major league fastball. Like, not like, you know, Chapman fat. Like, that'd be dangerous, right? Yeah, like that 93 to 95 miles per hour, maybe even up to 97. I want to know what that feels like to see if I can actually, you know, drop my knob fast enough to do that. So jump out of airplane, face a major league fastball. And then I want to open up on Broadway one day. I want to do Showboat.
Oh, Showboat?
What is that?
Yeah.
Wait, open up on Broadway?
So it don't have to be Broadway. I mean, it could be Central Avenue. I want to do Showboat. And if people out there in the atmosphere really, really love me, and, you know, you all believe in the work that Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson is doing, if you all help put together the Showboat, the reenactment of it, I will participate and play a part in that. And I want a singing part that leads into like a rap, though.
Like Paul Roberson singing part or any old singing part?
No, I'm talking like Paul Roberson. Like, I'm going to keep my shirt on, though. Yeah, I'm not going to take my shirt off. Like, I think that's...
You go sing Old Man River and put a rap to Old Man River?
Old Man River, and then be like, yo, then just turn it into, this is, yeah, knock it off. We're losing. We're losing listeners. Our show's about to get canceled.
Yes, we are.
Let's go to Dave then. Dave can help us. He's in Hoffman Estates. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Thomas. You've in the past have talked about disenfranchisement and stuff. Now, are you all aware that Tuesday is going to be the National Voter Registration Day? Mm. I learned about this from where I grew up at in the paper up there, that the legal women voters, you know, behind us. And this has been going on since 2012. And it's been observed like every fourth Tuesday of September, this national on the calendar. And, you know, yourself and Eisendrath and that people that were in the politics should have known about this. I mean, you know, it's been around 9 years already, so.
Yeah, Dave, what I'll say to that right away is, you know, I will admit, particularly over the last couple of years, and not making excuses, right? This is going to come across slightly as one. But I don't believe we've done a good enough job on this issue. And when I think about some of the major movements that have happened in our country, they've been attached to not just voter participation, but mass registration. Now, what I will say that I mean that more locally. Now, clearly in Georgia, there was an effort there, and there was some reaping of that, particularly with the two U.S. Senate seats, even though Stacey Abrams did not necessarily benefit directly in terms of her candidacy. It did lead to the state of Georgia electing two Democrats as their representatives in the Senate. And to your point, it's and I know there are some efforts. Don't get me wrong. I know in the Reverend Jackson Operation Push, they're constantly talking about it. But I think as we look at a progressive movement, there are more people, Dave, that I believe with us, particularly when it comes to Medicare, the treatment of our workers, you know, how we get people access to services, how we educate our children. But I also believe that the number of folks who agree with us, who do not necessarily engage politically in terms of pulling a lever, I believe that there is still not. I believe I know that there's still a gap there. So, Dave, you're spot on. Go ahead, brother.
Since this began, I mean, nearly 4.5 million voters have registered to vote on the holiday to date, and that the mantra of the Democratic Party is, you know, when we have more of them out there, we win.
Yeah, I think that's the point. That's a good call, Dave. Thanks for checking in with us this morning. You know, and Candace, there's something that I think is important to just add to that, and especially as it comes to the treatment of people in this moment. Too often you'll hear from the Democratic Party or even the Republican Party, but particularly the Democratic Party, where they'll say, like, this person is the future of the party. And an individual cannot be the future of anything, right? I actually believe the people are the future of progressive systemic change. And I think to Dave's point, as we look at how workers are treated, as we look at how children are treated in this moment, as we, you know, look at how public safety has not been a robust conversation that leads towards investment and full transformation and not just simply surveillance, people agree with that. And so now we have to have like a real concerted effort, Candace. I'll let you jump in here. A real concerted effort to merge and connect those efforts. And you've been a part of that in your work as an organizer in the South, having a progressive movement attached to not just voter engagement and participation, but voter registration. That is a sound recipe. Candace.
Having a political movement that is not just engagement of voters when it's time to vote. So, for instance, we're SEIU Healthcare, one of the sponsors of the show. I'm a proud employee of SEIU Healthcare. We are talking to our members now about the Build Back Better plan, about Biden's plan and what it will and what it will not do. People are enjoying just getting that information because let's make it plain. There are too many federal administrations, local executive administrations, and local elected leaders who, in between campaign time, do not talk to their constituents. The constituents don't know the issues that's going around. So not only do we have to register to vote, not only do we have to turn out to vote, but we have to turn up the volume on what our civic responsibility is. So that is calling your legislators when something is going on that you don't like. And that is making sure the electorate knows when there's something that they don't like. The Democratic Party is what they love to say is a big tent party. It's not a big tent party. It's a skyscraper party. Right? Everybody and their grandmama got a room in there. And on our progressive side, we can't just say, forget the 50th to the 150th floor. We got to knock on them doors too.
Yeah, 773-763-9278. It is Sunday mornings with your host, Brandon Johnson. Good to be with you all. Candace Castillo is joining us remotely, our faithful co-host. You know, Dave gave us a challenge. How do we make sure that even in this moment, our voices are being amplified through the democratic structure, which is that's being able to not just register, but being able to vote. You know, Candace, I actually do believe that, you know, constituents know the issues. You know, so I will give just a friendly amendment to that statement. But I hear you when it comes to, like, how do you take your understanding of the issues to the forefront? And what does engagement look like? Because here's the thing. It is hard for people to engage politically based upon the conditions in which the political structure creates. But if we don't engage, that structure perpetuates. And this is something that Dylan and I, before I was working on my attempt at spitting lyrics. I don't know if that's, I think the audience is clapping a little quieter there. But we were talking about just how the system perpetuates these conditions. And so I stood with the workers at the El Milagro plant on this week. 85 workers walked out, Candace, on their job. And they walked out because the conditions were unsafe. They've lost 5 co-workers to COVID. Here's the part that's insulting as well, is that those workers, some of whom have been there for 35 to 40 years, are making less than the new workers who are coming in. And this is how, you know, these corporations play it, right? And government participates in this as well, right? Because they set up a structure, a tax structure that incentivizes this type of bad behavior. And when we were at the press conference and we walked up to the stairs of the corporation, I want to say we forced, but we got the door open. I'll just say it like that. For the workers to actually talk to management. Now, those workers are back. The Nabisco workers that we stood with last week, those workers are back. People always ask me, you know, Johnson, you know, why are you getting in the middle of this stuff? Look, I'm not getting in the middle of it. I'm on a side. And I will always stand on the side of workers, especially these workers who are in need of Medicare. They're in need of health care, and they're in need of having dignity when they go to the workspace. And whether it's public school teachers going into school buildings and students going to school buildings, or 85, you know, workers who are providing a service for folks. Let's go to Jim. Jim's been holding for a little bit. Jim, welcome to Sunday Mornings.
Good morning. I was just thinking of two cases where an emergency I had to go to a hospital twice in Europe. Both times, no ID, no paperwork, no charge, absolutely lovely doctors. I envision the expansion of Medicare where we've got community clinics where you can get health and mental care for free and treat people. I mean, my brother was in Iceland, for instance. He had an emergency. He went through it. We went to the hospital anyway, and they gave me, my brother said, well, how much is the bill? He said, well, $5. It was $5 for 3 days of emergency care. Here we've got to go through every, you know, bring on our IDs, our insurance forms, who are we? It's all set up for that 20% for the, for the people, insured people to make their scratch. Mm. And we have to get rid of it eventually.
Jim, that's a good call. Jim, before you bounce up out of here, and we appreciate you engaging with us this morning. You know, that reminds me, my oldest, he's 13, and when we were preparing the birth plan, I was in the classroom teaching, and that was our health insurance through the Chicago Public Schools, and we end up getting a $1,000 bill for a service that was being provided to assist in our son's arrival. And we were charged. Why? Because we didn't, you know how you have to have certain things pre-approved? So in other words, they would pay for it had we called them in advance. But because we didn't know, we ended up getting charged for something that they would pay for, but we called them too late. You get my point, Jim. I get where you're going with this.
It's like a catch. It's a catch 22. It's a catch 22. But we should all be. It's very important to trust our doctor and trust the medicine. And the only way to do that is to get familiar with it. And if we had good clinics in every neighborhood where we could go in for mental health care, drug addiction, or whatever kind of addiction, nicotine, whatever we may be, a holistic doctor that we could trust, we'd have a better, happier population. Mm. Whenever we get to that date, they've been trying to do it for 100 years. You know, Franklin Roosevelt tried it. Everybody tried it. But we've got to get to that point. So I think this expansion of Medicare is very important. This bill is very important. But it still hasn't gone far enough. Anyway, you have a great morning.
Hey, Jim, you do the same. Jim, you just made my day. Let's see you.
Take care.
Buddy. You too. We'll talk again, okay? Jim just made my day. It's not that complicated. So he gets a studio audience. He had the entire studio cheering for him. Because it's not that complicated, y'all. Like, look, for real, like clinics in every neighborhoods, you know, Candace, I'm going to go to another call here, but just real quick, because I know you want to just jump in here. But like even clinics inside schools, you know, when Rahm Emanuel closed down schools in Chicago, particularly there was one, especially one that was just, they were all egregious. But the one in North Lawndale that really just, it was just quite upsetting because this school, Henson, interesting enough, Henson is where the former Cook County Board President Bobby Steele taught at. In fact, she was a teacher there while she was running for office back in the day. One of the original teachers who set the stage for teachers like myself to run for political office. But this school had not only a health clinic, Candace, in it, it also had like fresh foods food inside, so folks, the students, the families could get health care inside the school. They had access to healthy food. And the former mayor of Chicago shut it down. This current mayor is not in any hurry to provide every single school with a social worker, with a counselor, with a nurse in the midst of a pandemic. This is what Jim is getting at. People have tried this stuff before, but they haven't done it with the level of urgency and the level of care. And I'm going to use this word, a desire to actually see it through, a stick-to-itiveness is what I remember hearing growing up. And Candace, that's what we need in this moment.
We need so many things in this moment. The closing of the schools is one thing. The schools still sitting vacant in communities that have so much need is something else. So you all were talking about health bills. When Jaden was born, and it's his birthday, he was sick. We had a lot of health challenges. MRSA twice, tubes in the ear, you name it. Pneumonia four times. We had it all, right? And it was because I had a really good union job that I could go to Lurie Children's Hospital. But even with that good insurance, a good union job, my child was misdiagnosed at a hospital in Chicago. Now, it takes a lot for a parent to even get to the point of, we got to go to the emergency room. It takes even more for a parent that does not have insurance, that does not have any type of health care to do that. And it takes even more for a parent to have to drive past two or three hospitals because they took out their pediatric unit, or they took out their breathing unit, or they took out their asthma care unit. And that's what we are experiencing. Shout out to Representative Lamont Robinson, who is doing a whole lot of work, and State Senator Robert Peters, who's doing a whole lot of work to fight to make sure that parents don't have to go through that. That these hospitals keep their doors open and we don't face exorbitant bills just trying to stay healthy. Mm. We had the writer, the doctor from Oak Park on our show.
Yeah, Dr. David Ansel.
What was it like?
David Ansel.
Ansel, like a year ago. And we still miss the fact, and this is pre-pandemic, we still miss the fact that Black men on the south side and west side of Chicago have a life expectancy of 15 years shorter than white people in Chicago. Why is not violence? It's heart disease, diabetes, cancer.
Yeah. And the stress that comes with living in Chicago is one that, again, that's what we're, you know, decidedly are focused in on today. It's how we treat trauma. And, you know, Jim really made my day because he made it very simple, you all, because these political solutions that we are putting forth on this program, it's not like they're new concepts. It's having the political will. And I think someone in the chat actually indicated we're not just losing elections, you all, because that's one thing. But we're losing lives, you all. And we have to decide, like, as a nation, as a country, as a people, like that lives have to matter. They do. I'm going to take a quick break here. I promise you it'll be quick. I want to try to get one more call in here because I do want to lift up the work that the folks at the Chicago Teachers Union, that the work that they're doing and how families have engaged. But these are very difficult times. On the west side of Chicago, Jensen Elementary, there are literally students walking into buildings or walking into a building and they're coming out sick, y'all. And there are real consequences, a lot of severity as a result of just a poor leadership and not seeing the value of people. But we do value you. We see you. We love you. It is the hottest political program on this side of heaven. My name is Brandon Johnson. Candace is somewhere on the other side of the world. But you're with me. If you hang in there with me, y'all, we'll finish this conversation. We'll come right back. All right. See y'all in a minute. Once he let the brick go. And you know I know that's a bunch of snow. The beat is so butter. Peep the slow cutter as he utter the calm flow. I'm back, you all. You all are back. It is the largest progressive talk radio station in all of the world. It's right here in the city of Chicago. It's WCPT 820 AM where the facts do matter. This is Sunday morning. It's Brandon Johnson. We're 2 years strong. Candace Castillo, thank you for all of the love on social media. Thank you for the conversations. Vicky and Drew, always engaging. Of course, my sisters are hanging out with me as they always do. They're so faithful before they run off to church. Lori, the good Lori, we're going to hear from you, her in a second. Yeah, I mean, there's... I don't know. Stay right there for a second. I mean, I'm wondering, though, you know, I'm gonna go to Pam. But, you know, two breaks ago, Dylan, man, you were just talking about just the cycle of poverty that's created through the economic structure of these corporations, where the amount of money, of course, that is being made. I don't want to take words out of your mouth because you're just far more eloquent as an economist, Northwestern graduate. But these systems that they feed each other while the rest of us starve. I think that's ultimately what you were getting at.
Oh, yeah. And essentially, you know, as you were saying, that's a crazy factoid that the new workers are being paid the same amount as workers.
More, yeah.
That's even crazier. More than workers who are established and obviously have more experience, but, you know. It's crazy to me to hear people say, you know, the product's going to increase. Yeah, it may increase marginally, but over what, 30, 40 years, wages have stayed the same, but yet profits and our GDP has grown exponentially, you know, and corporate profits have grown exponentially. So it's not that the money is being distributed or the money is somehow being lost somewhere. No, it's going to very specific people at the top, right? And I would argue that they're no more essential than the workers who actually make the product, because if you don't have a product, then you don't have a board or, you know, a product to sell or a product to increase the cost on to make more money. And so, you know, it goes back to, you know, capitalism. You know, a lot of times we give a lot of the power to those who have the wealth and those who have the standing, right? But at the same time, those without the standing don't have, you know, they don't have 100 bodies somehow, or maybe they do, you know, through weird means, but they don't have the manpower innately within themselves, right, to make all these tortillas,
and
right?
And so, to your point, the power, we actually possess more power in this moment, but it requires more of us, and there's risk involved, right? Because the corporations have the ability to basically starve us out. And so that's why it was so impressive to see these 85 workers stand strong up against these corporations. Pam is on the west side. Thank you. When the producer claps for himself, that tells you like how big our egos are around here. Hey, Pam, help us out. Pam is on the west side of Chicago. Good morning. Thanks for holding, and welcome to Sunday Mornings.
Good morning. Thank you. And let me just say I'm thankful to you and also Congressman Davis for the activities over the weekend. I wasn't able to participate, but always supporting, and particularly to our brothers and sisters in recovery. It is not easy, and we are woefully neglectful in the resources that we're offering people. Let me just talk about the state of this country. We continuously talk about a capitalistic society. Well, Brandon and Candace, what do the wealthy people and the corporations want? I mean, you had to establish unions because they wanted to work children 16 hours a day. I mean, let's think about that. That's a no-brainer, right? You shouldn't have to have a union to create fair wages. So now we're in the midst of this pandemic, and you still have companies that don't want to provide a COVID-safe environment. See, we talk about street crime, right, and low-level crime. Where is the accounting for white-collar crime? Because these corporations are running this country in the ground, Brandon, and I sincerely mean it from my heart. And don't get it twisted. I'm going to talk to the CEOs. People aren't out here begrudging your wealth. You worked hard. You're an entrepreneur. That's all wonderful. But some people, all they want to do, Brandon, is work a job, right, where they have fair wages. A lot of time out for the family. so that they can be in a healthy environment. We have this big wave of so-called employment opportunity. And you have Career Fair, Chicago Hiring, and all of this. But I never hear these employers come on and talk about, we are the most COVID-safe environment hiring. They never talk about that. And it's always the blame. I'm standing with the working class people all the time, Brandon, because my mother worked hard for her three children. And I know other people's parents are out there working as well. So I'm asking these CEOs, what kind of world you want? Did you work your employees till they die? You don't give them enough sick leave. You want them all COVID infested. So I think, what's the end game? Because the wealthy people are woefully, woefully neglectful. And I guess no ethics, integrity. Are we even teaching ethics and integrity in colleges? I'm no longer impressed about where you obtained your degree. Because we got a lot of people coming out of all of these Ivy League schools who are screwing this country up. Yeah, they're uber wealthy, but they're screwing the country up. And if you're not using your wealth to help people, then I don't know what's going on. But Brandon and Candace, what I will ask you this. Will you all at some point have employers on who are getting it right?
That's a good challenge.
Who are doing the right thing.
That's a good
providing,
challenge.
Who are making a revenue by still putting the employees' needs first.
Yeah,
I don't think it has to be one or the other.
Thanks for the call, Pam. Spot on. Before you weigh in, Candace, so I want to cue up. Because it's not just corporations. So I want you all to take a listen here. It's actually, school systems and government that are also woefully negligent. So let's take a listen to our sister with the good fight, our sister Lori, Chicago Teachers Union, and other parents who have been pushing the mayor of Chicago to do right by our workers, right? Because there's a lot to be said about where corporations have gotten it wrong. But we also have to be very clear about, you know, where our government entities have been negligent as well.
In Chicago, return to school, but the public school system is struggling to keep kids COVID-free, forcing the Chicago Department of Health to now step in. According to the Chicago Department of Education, 530 people have tested positive for COVID since school began. 380 of those cases were students. All of this has resulted in some 11,000 people being listed as close contacts in the event of an outbreak. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot says she's disappointed in how public schools reopened this year. But teachers say, no, it's her fault. They're placing the blame on her, saying she's not doing enough to help keep kids safe from COVID. NBC News Now correspondent Maura Barrett joins us now for more outside Jensen Miller Scholastic Academy in Chicago. Maura, good morning. Remind us all, what did the Chicago public school system initially promise to parents when children first returned to school, and have they lived up to that promise?
Good morning, Vicki. Yeah, just about a month ago, we were covering the first day of school back in Chicago Public Schools, a massive school district here. And they had said that they have this health and safety of the kids top of mind. Now, a month later, parents and teachers alike are feeling like that's not the case, because the Chicago Public Schools had changed their safety plan just 1 week before school started. They eliminated those temperature checks and daily health screenings that parents were to complete at home before their kids came into school. And they said that there was going to be a robust test and trace plan in place so that students could get tested weekly if they wanted to. But that hasn't been fully implemented yet. Only 3% of students are enrolled. And that, again, is voluntary, but they don't even have the vendor in place to be able to accommodate if everybody in the school district wanted to. And they're already operating very slowly. And so lots of teachers and parents very frustrated here, because when you have something like 11,000 close contacts in schools like here at Jensen, they 11 of their 17 classrooms are quarantined now, and parents are feeling that there's not transparency from the district.
That's a mess. You spoke to one Chicago teacher who says she doesn't feel safe inside her classroom because of the lack of safeguards. What more can you tell us about what she's experiencing now on a day-to-day basis going to school and not really being sure how safe she is or her students are?
Exactly. Lori Torres is a Spanish teacher for the district. She teaches grades from pre-K all the way up to eighth grade. So she's seeing a variety of students every day. And she's also a mom of three kids that go to three separate schools at CPS. And so she's concerned on a parental level and as a teacher. But she says that the safeguards CPS promised just simply aren't in place. I want you to hear a little bit more about what she says is lacking.
As a teacher, I want to know that the safeguards that we know helped are in place. I want to know that contact tracing and reports of cases doesn't take 10 and 12 days. I want to know that in communities where vaccine levels are lower, that contact tracing and testing is actually happening.
And as for her mental health, Lori says she feels stressed and frustrated every day walking into the class.
Thank you so much, Lori. Lori is, you know, very strong, faithful, you know, mother, wife, dedicated educator, Candace, and she just said that the stress level that she's experiencing is heavy. And, you know, again, whether it's Nabisco workers, El Milagro workers, educators and paraprofessionals, cafeteria workers, custodial staff that work inside government buildings. Let me give you some closing thoughts. You know, Candace, we certainly have work to do, and people's lives and their livelihoods are dependent upon us getting it right.
So I want to lift up two things real quick. This week was really hard and really traumatic for me as a Black woman with a child in Chicago public school system and of me being of Caribbean descent. This week, not only do you hear about a school with 11 of the 17 classrooms in quarantine due to COVID, you learn about threats at multiple Chicago public high schools and a shooting of two students. And then you see what is going on with Haitians, with the Haitian community that was living in South and Central America and being met at our borders with men on horseback and whips. Hug somebody right now. Love somebody right now and love yourself and allow yourself some grace. The vaccine is utterly important. And I do think in some fields it should be mandated. But I also think that your mental health and stability right now in America, in America and in Chicago, that is so crazy, is also important. So love yourself right now and give yourself some grace.
Thank you. Thank you, Candace, for that. I mean, that's something that Lori said that I think is actually very powerful. And we don't want to lose sight of this, but, you know, just, you know, kind of paraphrasing, but, you know, every single day we're walking in not just with trauma, but we're walking into trauma. Our neighborhoods are not just neighborhoods. They're our homes. And, you know, when you think about the sanctity and how sacred one's home is, that's got to be the safest space for people. And you can't have a safe, secure home if every time you step outside, you're reminded by just how much we lose every day. How about a world where people can win? Just win. How about a world where we actually have political solutions that allow people to win and not corporations or someone's political career? Because they're too afraid or either incompetent to step up and lead. I think the smartest thing that one can do is to surround yourself with other smart people. I'm fortunate I grew up in a household with 10 brothers and sisters, two of whom are watching this morning. I don't know what the other ones are doing. They're not watching this show, which is a problem. Thank you, Evelyn and Joy. But we learned to collaborate. There was one bathroom.
Oh my God.
We had to figure it out and work together. Right. I don't know why I'm getting applause for having one bathroom, and maybe because I survived growing up with one bathroom. But we learned to work together. It was our lives depended upon one another. And I believe that's true for all of us. That is a type of political leadership that we aspire to have and to become. Where we collaborate with individuals and we collaborate with groups and organizations that allow all of us to win. And right now, we're not winning. But we're still in the game. We're still in the fight, you all. And that's, you know, what I'm encouraged by this morning. And so I want to thank, of course, our callers for hanging out with us this morning. And thank you for Jim and Dave and Pam and the folks who are on social media. I appreciate you all. Of course, I want to thank Paul and of course, Dylan for holding it down for us. We had some sponsors, you all. We still do. Thank you to the Chicago Federation of Labor. They've been with us in all of these fights. Thank you to CFL. Thank you to the Cook County Colleges Teachers Union, Local 1600. Of course, we want to thank the SEIU, HCII, home health care providers. We have the Illinois Federation of Teachers, 100,000 workers all over the state of Illinois. And of course, we have the Chicago Teachers Unions Foundation. They're doing amazing work all over the country to bring educational justice and opportunities for families that have been woefully neglected and left out for far too long. And of course, we have the Friends of Brandon Johnson. Thank you all so much for just your commitment to justice and righteousness. No matter how difficult it gets, first of all, if the Lord says the same, of course, we'll be here when Sunday comes. But no matter how difficult it gets, no matter how the challenges continue to arise, if we remain committed and faithful to the cause, I believe that the righteousness of our work will prevail. So remain faithful. God bless you Sunday mornings with Brandon Johnson.